He said, last week we spent some time talking about the intimate relationship that Jesus had developed with the one family, with the two sisters and their brother. And they lived together in a town just a few miles outside of Jerusalem. And I'm going to bring up the map in just a second, but we hung this up here so I could kind of point out, Jesus is from up here. He was born in Nazareth, he hung out in Nazareth, but he spent most of his time in Capernaum. Capernaum was a little bit bigger town. Nazareth was kind of a nothing type of a town. But Capernaum's all the way up here on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, okay? And Jerusalem was all the way down here, okay? Which meant anytime he came to Jerusalem, it was a long walk. He didn't make that pilgrimage all the time. He did it during the times where Jews were supposed to. There were like three required festivals for males over the age of 20. And Jesus, being a good Jew, as well as Christ, made it to all of those. And they were week-long celebrations. And since people were coming from all over the country, really all over the world, to attend these, a place to stay was like a big commodity. Okay, and Jesus found a place to stay a few miles outside of town, a place called Bethany, which is kind of like a little suburb of Jerusalem, okay, in a friend's home. It turns out to be a pair of sisters and their brother that took really, really good care of them. And since he spent a lot of time with them, they had a very, very intimate relationship. Okay, so in this particular case, Jesus is on his way back to Capernaum, ministering actually on the other side of the Jordan, about a day's journey from where they're at. Okay, and the brother, Lazarus, becomes deathly ill. So let's take a look at, now we're in chapter 11 of John, verse 3. And if somebody could read that for me.
But the two sisters sent a message to Jesus, telling him, Lord, your dear friend is very sick.
Okay, and so, again, just to kind of point this out on the map, where everybody is at here. And Israel's not that big of a country. Then you want to move to the next slide, okay? And so Jesus is just on the other side of the Jordan over here. There are only certain places marked with the little lines here that you could cross where it was shallow enough and narrow enough that you could walk across on foot. Okay, so you couldn't just cross the Jordan wherever. There are certain places they call fords where you could go across. And so one of them, the most popular one, was here. And then there was a road that went up through Jericho to Jerusalem. That's where all the pilgrims traveled. And that's why, guys, in the Bible you see so many stories about Jericho. Why Jericho? Because Jericho was not that cool of a town either. But it was along the sort of the parade route, so to speak, where all the pilgrims came through. And so there were always people out whenever it was the time for one of these feasts watching the people that would come from the north, from Galilee, into Jerusalem. Okay? And so Jesus is on the other direction. He's going this way. Bethany is outside of Jerusalem. This is where the sisters live. Okay? And it's about a day's journey to the other side of the Jordan where Jesus is now ministering on his way back north. Okay? So that's where everybody is at. And Jesus knows this has to be pretty serious because he knows that the sisters have enough respect for him and the ministry that he's doing that they're not going to send word to him unless this is indeed a huge crisis. I mean, they're just going to call him just because Lazarus isn't feeling well, like he has the flu, and he wants Jesus to come back and hold his hand. Okay, he's on death's doorstep, or they would not have sent a messenger. Now, keep in mind, the messenger has to go that day's journey in order to get Jesus in the first place. And it's going to take Jesus a day to walk back there when it's time for him to come. Okay? Which makes it kind of interesting because and it makes Jesus seem a little bit out of character even, given his relationship with the sisters. So let's go ahead and read next in verses 4 to 6. Okay, so we're going to get to that staying the extra 2 days. So he gets word that Lazarus is deathly ill, and he says, you know what? It's not that big of a deal. We're going to finish what we're doing here, and then we'll head back. It doesn't seem very Jesus-like, especially given the relationship that he has with the sisters. Okay? But more interesting, and where I want to spend a little bit of time before we move on, because sometimes we can get the wrong impression from things, and I think this is one of those that we need to talk about why sometimes bad things happen. Okay? Because this is the second time in a row we've heard this statement. It happened for the glory of God. Okay, so let me just ask you. So, you remember the last time that happened? It wasn't that many chapters ago, back in chapter 9, right? The man born blind. You remember what Jesus told his disciples about that guy? Why was he blind?
To glorify God.
This man, this affliction had come over him so that God might be glorified in it. Okay, and so now we come to the next one. It's like Lazarus is sick, so that God can be glorified. Now, it's really easy sometimes to get the impression of, oh my gosh, okay? Does that mean real sickness and affliction is always so that God can get some kind of glory out of it? The answer is, unfortunately, no. That's not always the case, okay? So let's take a look at a couple of these guys so that we recognize that every sickness and every illness is not brought about or allowed by God just so that God can be glorified at the end of it. Okay? Sometimes that's the case, all right? But not always. So let's go back even further in John, chapter 5, verse 14. Okay, so in this particular case, this is another guy he healed by the pool, if you remember back. And he says this time, now stop sinning, lest something worse happen to you. Okay, so sometimes, guys, we end up with affliction, we end up with illness, we end up with problems because of our own sin, because of some of the things we're doing to ourselves. It's one of those unfortunate things. Sometimes that sin happens over a long period of time. It was just... talking with a couple of guys earlier this morning, and I was talking with Arlene really early this morning because she gets here really early, and we were just talking about it's really unfortunate that the consequences of sin are not immediate. You know, sometimes the consequences are down the line a little bit, and it feels like you're getting away with it, or it feels like there's nothing happening, because the truth is, if all the consequences of sin were immediate, we'd sin a whole lot less. You know what I'm saying? I'll just give you a real quick example. My mom passed away a little over a year ago. Okay, she died of emphysema. She started smoking when she was 16. Okay? She quit smoking when she was 75 because she had emphysema. Okay? Now, was the sickness that she had, and it was, guys, emphysema is a terrible sickness. And if you're still smoking, I would... If you ever saw anybody in that condition, I think you would give that up pretty quickly. It's a terrible way to die. Okay? You think if my mom knew how her life would come to an end when she was 16, she would have started smoking? Unfortunately, sometimes that sin comes out over a long period of time. Okay? Do you think God had anything to do with that? Her affliction was due to her own choices. I mean, she chose to do that. And she knew it was wrong. She knew it wasn't healthy for her. And she knew she was abusing her body. But in some cases, she loved the sin more than she loved. Yeah. Okay. And unfortunately, that's how it happens sometimes. Not that smoking is necessarily a huge sin, or the Bible points that out. But it's one of those things that, you know, you're desecrating the temple of the Holy Spirit, right? Anyway, so very often illness is because of our own doing, okay? Let's go ahead and read Romans 5, verse 12.
When Adam sinned, sin entered the world. Adam's sin brought death, so death spread to everyone, for everyone sinned.
Okay, the next thing is, the truth of it is, because we sometimes blame God for everything bad that happens, okay? But if we go all the way back to the beginning with Adam... Okay, Adam ushered in a new world when he chose to sin against God, right? And we still live in that fallen world where sin and death and disease and all of that kind of thing exists. It wasn't what God originally intended when he created the world. It was brought in by Adam, and we live within that world. Okay, and sometimes our afflictions or the things that happen to us can be because of someone else's sin, that collateral damage, that fallout, okay, or can just because of the world in which we live, which is no longer perfect. Just tell you real quickly one afflictions, and this came upon my daughter when she was like in eighth grade. Okay, she got deathly ill and couldn't eat, couldn't keep anything down, and she lost a ton of weight, like 20 pounds, and there wasn't much to her at that time. Anyway, she was down like 70 something pounds, and it was one of those situations where I was very angry with God. There's been a few of those along the way. Sometimes you have that little temper tantrum. It's like, you know, I'm going to be mad at you until you fix this. I blamed God for that. And we went everywhere. We went to children's. We went all over looking for an answer. There didn't seem to be any answers. Okay. Well, come to find out, finally, she has some real severe food allergies. Okay. Well, that's not God's fault. The reason she has food allergies is because of what they have done to food over the years. Okay. They started genetically modify the food that we eat, so it's more resistant to different diseases. It's less palatable for insects, and so they don't eat the food nearly as much. And literally, they've incorporated some natural insecticides into a lot of the plants in order that they can reap a better profit from farming and from all of that kind of stuff. Okay, and so because of that greed, a lot of people are suffering from a lot of digestive diseases that didn't exist only 20 or 30 years ago. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh my gosh, when I was a kid, everybody had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Now half the kids are allergic to peanuts in a way that if they even smell a peanut, they go into a coma. You know what I'm talking about? You see, signs all around here in every kid's classroom. This is a peanut-free classroom. And yet, when I was a kid, every kid took peanut butter and jelly. I mean, there wasn't a separate table for the peanut butter eaters to sit at. But there is now. Okay? And nobody even knew what gluten was 15 years ago. And now you see it all over the place. And it's affected both Nicole and Cora. Okay? That wasn't because of their sin. It was because of the greed and sin of others, okay? And there's a lot of afflictions that come upon us because of the sins of other people, okay? It just is what it is. We live in a world where sin exists, and we all pay a price because of it, all right? And that's not God's fault either. Let's take a look at 2 Corinthians 12.
Even though I have received such wonderful revelations from God, so to keep me from becoming proud, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger from Satan to torment me and keep me from becoming proud.
Okay, so there's a lot of debate going back and forth. It doesn't really say, Paul never says what that thorn in the flesh is, but many believe it was some kind of physical affliction. Paul actually was a very sickly guy. I don't know what your vision of Paul is, but he was kind of short, he was bald, he was very skinny, and he was always sick. Okay? And he attributes that to God making sure that he didn't become too prideful. Okay? It's one of those weird things. It's like, man, whenever things come against us, one or two things happens, and this is what we're going to get to later on. Okay? It either drives me closer to God or it drives me away from God. Okay? Usually, closer to him. You know, in my afflictions, I hold tightly to his hand and I recognize how weak and vulnerable I am. Okay? And so, I mean, Paul was up there, you know, just about, you know, working miracles and doing all the stuff that Paul did, and it's like, but God kept him humble, but making sure that he was still relied on God just for his very health. You know what I'm saying? Okay? And sometimes that's the case. Let's go ahead and move on now into the James chapter 1.
Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance is a chance to grow. So let it grow. And when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing.
So James tells us that sometimes The afflictions, the trials that God allows to come into our life are for refining. Okay? And actually on the 18th, Keith and I talked about this, and this is what we're going to do at the Dunes. It's going to be a really, really cool demonstration that he has that'll entertain the kids, because we're not going to do kids' church then. We're all going to be together, but the kids will love what he's doing. And I have a message for you on what we call the refining fire. Okay, where God uses sometimes trials and affliction in your life to get rid of the impurities. Okay, and he's going to smolt some metal and show you how a metal worker gets the impurities out of metal when he's working with those, and why he does some of that stuff. But sometimes God uses some of those to come against you, so that some of those things, like not just pride, but sometimes the selfishness, and sometimes the other things that are within us, okay, as he refines us. And so sometimes God actually uses those kinds of things to refine us and refine and grow our faith in him. Okay? Now, I wish I could tell you the exact reason. And over the years, I've had this question before, and I've had a lot of people ask me, why is this happening to me? Okay? When Cora got really sick, I remember it's like, why is this happening to my daughter? I mean, talk about the purest, nicest girl, you know, that has just a heart of gold, and now she's sick, she can't eat. She loses 20 pounds when she weighs like 90 pounds to start with. Are you kidding me? How can this possibly bring glory to God? Well, it wasn't about that. You know what I mean? And when Nicole has gotten her diagnosis along the way, and sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, doesn't being a servant count for anything? Don't we get some like extra special hedge of protection around us because of the work that we do? And you ask the why, and I say, I wish I could tell you why bad things happen to us sometimes. I know that they do. I know that God never promised us protection from all of the evils within the world. Okay, I know that there's a whole lot of different reasons why things can come against you. And very often I'm in the same boat. Unless there's blatant sin in your life, we can say this is the reason why it happened. You need to give up drinking, or you need to give up smoking, or you need to give up this. Okay, usually, aside from that, it's like I have no idea why this has come into your life. Why God has allowed this, or why it's come against you, even if God's not allowing it. Okay? What I do know, however, is this. This is what we're going to kind of get into. No matter what the reason, and no matter what the affliction, you can glorify God in it. Do you believe that? But that's not always that easy. Okay? So the question, and I'll be more than happy to entertain answers if you want to throw them out here, is how do I do that?
Just by praising. By thinking, praising, even in the midst of the storm.
And, okay, so we can do that, and I know a person right now that's in really, really deeply in that, okay? And what I'm going to suggest to you is even in the midst of it, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, but I do want it to be authentic. You know what I mean? It's okay to fake it a little bit, but I think that gets you even in worse trouble down the line, okay? Because there's, like I said, there's a person we know right now that's in the middle of really heavy affliction, and always get the same thing. In the midst of this, you know, I'm praising the Lord, and I'm seeing all the good, and it's like, but I know you well enough to know that that's not the case. I know how you're feeling right now, and you're telling everybody that, but we all know that that's not the case. It's okay to have that wonder and that doubt, and it's like, I don't know why God's doing this to me. I don't like it. I'm very angry with God in the midst of all of this. Okay? And still be able to do authentically what Troy just suggested. Okay? But how do you get to that point where, even in the midst of the storm, even when you're feeling angry, even when you don't understand what God is doing or why this has come upon you, that you can still get down on your knees and worship in the midst of it? Okay, because that's not something that naturally occurs. Trust me, I've been angry with God. I've had lots of temper tantrums with him over the years. They're becoming less and less and less. But sometimes that's still my, you know what I mean? And I'll confess to my guys sometimes. It's like, you know, I know the right thing to do, but I don't feel it, and it's really hard. Okay, because that's being authentic, right? And people can't come alongside you if you're not authentic with them. That's why we develop a relationship like this, so that you can be authentic with one another. You don't have to worry about being judged because you're not praising when you're supposed to be praising, because you don't feel like it when you're supposed, you know what I'm saying? Because then guys, people can come alongside you. But the quickest way to isolate yourself is to not be authentic, right? To put on the mask, to put on the armor, so that nobody can get close to you. And then, then you're choosing to do it alone. And that's not how God wants you to be. So, but I want you to think about that. But the thing is, what I will tell you is, you need to prepare in advance. So let's take, for example, what's the tropical storm down in Louisiana right now? Barry? Is that the one? Okay. So, guys, they get a warning about this ahead of time, right? And yet, always in the news, you see, you know, guys carrying these big sheets of plywood out in the heavy wind trying to get it over. It's like, why didn't you put the plywood up when they told you the thing was coming? You know what I mean? Now, in the midst of the storm, you're going to try to put the plywood up? And that never goes very well. Okay? So, guys, do we know that the storms are coming? It's one of those things that we've almost been guaranteed, right? Let's go back and read what Jesus said in John 16, 33. So one of the things that Jesus says, and this is a little bit farther down the line, he's just about ready to leave his disciples, and he says, guys, just so you know, in this world, you're going to have trials, you're going to have troubles, and you're going to have sorrows. This is his own disciples. He didn't say, guys, just so you know, I'm going to protect you from all that stuff. Nothing bad will ever happen to you, so you can walk boldly to the places that I send you. No, he tells them exactly the opposite. Right? Life's going to be tough sometimes. All right, so you guys, that applies to us as well. So we know that the storms of life are going to come. So when do you get ready for the storms of life? Before they come, right? You put the plywood up over the windows when you know that they're coming. And this is, guys, I'm giving you the warning, right? The storm's coming. It's a slow mover, or maybe it's a fast mover. We don't know what that is, but I guarantee you that it's coming. So go ahead and put the plywood up, so that when it comes, you're not out there in the middle of the storm trying to figure out what it is that you're going to do. Okay? And so, the next question is then, what am I supposed to do to prepare myself so that in the midst of these trials and troubles and sorrows, I can give God glory? And here's where we go back to Mary and Martha. And here's where I actually started with Nicole. We were going to try to talk about that beginning part where, okay, so how do we talk about, you know, when bad things happen to good people and why we can't figure out what's going on with God? And how do you know? And the answer is, we don't always know. Okay? And then it kind of evolved into, since we were doing the Mary and Martha thing, here we have kind of like a contrast in two personalities or two lifestyles, okay, and two reactions to exactly the same situation. Both of them, their brother just died when Jesus shows up. He shows up too late, and they both have an interaction with Jesus, very different. Okay, and so that's the study that we're going to look at, guys, right now. Okay, Mary and Martha. So last week we looked at an earlier encounter. Right? It wasn't in John, but it was in Luke. And we're going to reread that. Because this was early in Jesus' ministry, early when he started to go and take refuge in the home of Mary and Martha. And we see how the two sisters treat him while he's there. Okay? So let's go ahead and read from Luke 10, verses 38 to 40. Actually, it's 42, I think. But that's okay. And guys, we talked a little bit last week about, you know, hospitality and what that looks like, and service, and what that looks like. Okay, and so, but let's take a look at the two sisters. Okay, so we have two sisters. They grow up together, same circumstances. Obviously, Lazarus is the man, so he's sitting at the table with Jesus. And we got one who is in Jesus' service, right? And that's Martha. What's Martha doing? She's serving Jesus, but kind of from a distance. She's doing all the kitchen work and doing all this kind of thing, right? And then we have Mary, who is not helping with any of that. In fact, she's not really serving in the way that we look at serving, but what is she doing? She's sitting at the feet of Jesus, worshiping him. Okay? And now we have another, actually, kind of a personality trait that comes out. Martha comes and confronts Jesus about Mary's behavior. In fact, she tells Jesus what he should be doing. You need to tell Mary to get out here and help me, Jesus. Don't you think that that's only fair? Don't you think it's unfair, all the things I'm doing, and she's sitting here, and I'm doing the... Okay. Now, let's fast forward now to this situation, and we'll see the exact same traits show up in the two sisters. Are you with me? Okay, but we're going to remember back to this. One sits at the feet of Jesus and worships. The other one serves him, but also at the same time thinks about how unfair her service is with all of these others not serving. And you see the danger in that? What happens when you serve and you look at others that aren't serving? You think somehow they're down here, you're up here, and the one that you're serving owes you something. It's one of the things that we got to be extremely cautious of. Martha's going to get into that situation because of her service where she believes that she is owed something. Because it's really easy to fall into that trap. I've confronted God in that very same way several times in my past. Lord, I'm doing all of this stuff, and you're allowing this to come against me, and these guy people over here, they're not doing anything, and they're just walking scot-free, and they're not... It's like, what's up with that? You owe. It's like, you owe me, Lord, for all that I've done. Guess what? He doesn't. He's given me so much that I can never repay even what I owe him. Okay? He's never in my debt, guys, ever. But it's easy to kind of fall into that trap if it's all about service in the wrong way. Okay, so... got it. Yep. So, now let's fast forward in time when things get hard. Okay, that was when things were easy and we saw what happened. One's serving, one's worshiping, life is easy. Now see, when things get hard, how that shows up later on. Okay, so now we're back in John chapter 11, now verse 7.
Finally, he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea."
And so, after two more days of kind of lingering on the other side of the Jordan, even though he knows his dear friend Lazarus is dying, Jesus, I don't know what he would say casually, if he walked really slow or sauntered, but he definitely took his time. He wasn't in a big rush to go there, which seems uncharacteristic. And yeah, he said, okay, guys, I think now it's time. And he starts back to Judea. Okay? Now, we're going to actually skip over a small section. We'll come back to that next week. And we're going to fast forward to Jesus arriving, okay, in Bethany with the sisters. All right, so let's skip ahead to verse 17. Okay, so now let's take a look at the logistics of this before we even go any further. All right, so they're blaming Jesus for being late, or they're going to. Okay, if you would have been here, he would not have died. But when Jesus gets there, so let's do the math here. So it takes him a day to walk there from the other side of the Jordan where he was at. He lingered for 2 days. So how many days is that? 3 days, right? The messenger comes to him. He waits 2 more days, and then he walks a day. So that's 3 days. And when he gets there, they tell him, he's been dead for 4 days. So you keep this in the back of your mind that if Jesus would have immediately left, as soon as they would have asked him to go, he still would have been late. Lazarus was dead. Actually, by the time they sent the messenger to get to him, he died. Okay. Yet in the midst of this, the sisters are going to kind of blame Jesus. All right? So let's move forward and kind of take a look at that. And now we're in verse 20 and 21. So first we're going to take a look at Martha, right? The bold sister who has no problem confronting Jesus on what he needs to do. Right? Of course, because she's served him so faithfully. Well, let's see what Martha has to say.
When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him. But Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you only had been here, my brother would not have died."
Okay, so here's Martha. Mary kind of lingers behind, okay? But Martha, as soon as she hears that Jesus is there, she's out the door to confront him. In fact, I'm going to get to him before he even gets here and let him know what I think. And what does she think? You know, if you would have been here, my brother wouldn't be dead right now. This is one of those things, guys, and we're going to work on this as soon as we can, at reading things with tone, right? Because the tone in which something is said, because later on, Mary's going to use the exact same words, but you can feel that her tone is a little bit different. You know, I keep bringing it up. When I was in Israel, I saw the what do they call that class? Dramatic interpretation of Scripture. It was amazing. Okay, it may be give me a whole new insight about reading things with tone. Okay, so I want you to visualize this with the tone that Martha uses when she confronts Jesus. So she comes out the door, she doesn't even wait. She hears that he's on his way, and she's on the way to meet him. And basically, she's standing face to face with Jesus, and she says, "You know, if you would have been here, we sent for you. If you would have been here, my brother would not be dead right now." You ever had that conversation with God? Not exactly like that, but the confrontation is like, you know what, Lord? Okay? Now, why does Martha feel like she can do that? Yeah, it's the age-old thing. It's like, when I feel like the service that I'm giving is so that I get something in return, you understand? That's why salvation cannot be about being earned. It can't be a situation where you think that God owes you something. You understand? It develops really the wrong kind of relationship. It's not the relationship that Jesus seeks from us. This I owe you or you owe me situation. We do away with all of that. You can't do anything to earn it. No matter what your service is, it's not nearly enough. And God owes you nothing. Okay? So once you take that off of the table, now the whole relationship can change in the way that it has to go. Understand what I'm saying? Okay. Let's go ahead now and read verse 22.
"Now I know that God will give you whatever you ask."
And so what's the implication in that? Just so now, I know it's not too late. We need to do what you needed to do, but you can still fix this. Jesus. I know you can. The idea is, so why don't you? Right? I know you can do this. So Jesus responds to that.
"Jesus told her, 'Your brother will rise again.'"
He says, "Don't worry. Lazarus will rise again." Now, she goes to her head knowledge. And she says, yeah. I know. I know what you've been teaching. Well, let's go ahead and read that.
"Yes, Martha said, 'He will rise when everyone else rises at the last day.'"
So she's kind of got this sarcasm about her, right? "Yeah, I know. I know what you taught. Yeah, he'll rise with everybody else on the last day, but that's not what I want. I don't find that to be much of a comfort." Sometimes it's not, guys. I mean, just be honest with you. Having just gone through this with my sister not that long ago, you know, there's that pain. And you realize, okay, yes, you know, she's in a better place right now. And I know she's walking the streets of heaven with Jesus right now. But somehow that doesn't just like take care of everything. Yeah, I mean, there's still that loss. There's still that feeling of hurt. And it's like, very often we say that, and people say it to us. And just so you know, sometimes that doesn't feel all that comforting. You know what I mean? So, and she's saying, basically, I don't feel all that comforted by that. Yeah, I know he's going to rise with everybody else, but you know what? Right now, I'm still angry, and I'm still hurting. So, again, Jesus responds. Now, again, guys, we've got to read this with the right sort of tone. Maybe we can, but if we go long enough at this, we're going to have you guys reading this with the tone all the time. You're going to think, okay, what would Jesus' response be? So, when she comes at him like this, is Jesus going to be angry? He knows how much she's hurting. Okay? So, his response is going to be one of compassion. Okay? He's not confronting one of the Pharisees. He's talking with one of his really dear friends, and she's hurt. Okay, so having that, so now we'll see if one of you guys can read this with the right tone and put the pressure on you.
Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live, even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha?"
And so, guys, can you feel the compassion? He's just like, "Martha, I'm the resurrection and the life. Your brother's going to be okay because he trusted in me. Do you believe that?" And okay, sometimes we have to say things over and over again. You know, it's one of those things. Is the word of God always brings comfort? But two things. Sometimes it has to be spoken out loud, and sometimes it has to be spoken more than once. Okay? You want to become a good minister to those that are hurting? Learn a couple of good verses of comfort. And speak those with compassion. Okay, learn the tone in which they were presented, and speak them like that out loud. And sometimes you need to repeat the same thing a couple of times. Okay, because the bottom line, what Jesus is saying is, you know, your brother trusted me. Are you going to trust me in this? And what it does is it gives Martha a chance to kind of think about that just a little bit. Okay, and her tone's going to change. Okay, she still feels hurt, but she's recognizing the truth in what Jesus says, okay, and why he's saying it, and what that speaks to her personally. Are you with me so far? Okay. And Martha was actually sort of set up for this, okay? How do you get to this point where you have this head knowledge of Jesus, right? But when it comes to the crisis, you're kind of in this situation. Go all the way back to her relationship with Jesus before. She's in that confrontation mode, and she has that tone because she believes that all of her service over time has won her a special place, special consideration, and she deserves something, that somehow Jesus owes her something. Okay? It's been about what I've earned instead of, "Lord, I'm going to trust you even when I don't understand." Okay? Let's go ahead and pick it up now then. In verse 27, so here's the place where Martha's tone changes. She's finally like, "You know, yeah, I do believe you. I've always believed that you're the Messiah. And I am going to trust you." And she leaves. Okay? And she goes to get her sister. So now let's take a look at the other side. Here's Mary, who spent all of her time with Jesus sitting at his feet. maybe not serving quite so much, but literally worshiping him whenever she has the opportunity. Okay? So let's take a look now at Mary in verse 32.
When Mary saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died."
And so, first of all, you recognize the differences in one of those contrasts. When Martha comes out, what's her stance with Jesus? She's on her feet, face to face, nose to nose, so to speak. When Mary comes out, she has the same thing going on, right? Her brother's died, and she's doesn't understand why Jesus is delayed, why he's late, and why he's not doing more than he is doing. But what's her initial response? She falls at his feet. Why is she at his feet when her sister is standing in his face? Because that's where she's always been. Okay? So this is nothing different. It's the place that she's always been with Jesus. Okay? It's the difference between pure service and pure worship. And it always works like this. Okay? God wants your worship more than your service. You know why? Because he knows if he gets your heart, he'll also get your hands. But if he gets your hands, it doesn't mean he'll necessarily get your heart. Okay? So the place to always start is at the feet of Jesus. The service will come. Guaranteed. Okay? Once your heart is changed, you'll serve gladly without this idea that you have something coming in return for it. Okay? But if you serve without ever falling at the feet of Jesus, you'll always respond the way that Martha does. Okay? It becomes much, much more difficult. Okay? So, in the same situation, Mary actually uses the exact same words. Okay? What's the difference? Okay? So, what does Mary say to him? "Lord, if only you had been here." Who do we have that can read that with tone?
When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had only been here, my brother would not have died."
This guy's got potential, huh? We're going to get him on that drama team one of these days. Okay? So the difference is the confrontational tone versus the, "Lord, if only you would have been here. If only you would have been here, I know that this wouldn't have happened." That soft and that difference in tone. All right. So instead of turning on Jesus, she literally, in the midst of her trials, turns to Jesus and falls at his feet. Okay. She uses the very same words, but the tone is very different. And she's only being authentic. Okay, that's not, she's not trying to cover up. It's like, "Oh Lord, I praise you. I know that you're going to work all things for the good, and the death of my brother is a really good thing, and I'm just so excited because of it." That would have been a lie. She still feels the loss. She still wishes her brother was there. But in the midst of it, she trusts Jesus for what's going to come next. Even though she doesn't know what that's going to be, all she knows is, "You know what? I wish you would have been here." Now, Jesus knows what's going to come next. And just so you know, we don't always get the resurrection. We don't always get the healing. Sometimes that's not in the forecast. These are some special miracles. And sometimes that doesn't happen. Okay? But we go back to the trials. Let's go back to John 16:33. Let's go ahead and read that one again.
"I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world."
He tells them and warns them ahead of time two things, okay? That things are going to get bad, number one. Number two, he's still in control. And he tells us that so that in the midst of whatever it is, that we can have peace. Okay? And peace equates to trust. Now, whenever we do our couples class, and we do this especially sometimes with couples that before they're married, and we talk about the importance of trust in a relationship, you know, and the sequence in which you do things, you know, how you get to know someone, then you trust someone, and then you rely on them, and then you make a commitment to them, right? And coming to that point of trust is important before you make a commitment, right? So it's so important that you have a trust before you actually commit, especially in like a marriage relationship. I mean, do you want to marry somebody you don't trust? Oh, but man, we had such chemistry. We're so passionate. How do you get to the point where you have the trust? How do you develop trust in a relationship? Because it's the only way that it happens, right? We talk about the three T's. You want to tell me what the three T's are, Nicole? Talking together over time. Spending time together, talking, and lots of time. Okay? You can't rush some of that stuff. And so, if that's true in a romantic relationship or any relationship, we use that same thing in everything that we do. You know, I'm not going to make a commitment to anything. We've gone through this with churches before. Until I develop a trust, I'm not going to make a commitment. Right? And how do I get that place where I... Because we've done that before and been found out that we've made a mistake. Okay? Now you're heavily committed and now you find out you can't trust someone. That's like a really bad thing. Okay? How do you get to the point where you can easily commit to Jesus? How do you get to the point where you can have peace in the middle of a storm? How do you get to the point where you can fall at his feet and worship even in the midst of the worst crisis of your life?
Spend time in the Word, too. Your relationship.
Okay, so the only way that happens is through relationship, not through service, not through checking the box, not through saying, okay, I've come to church 9 times in a row, so that, you know, that gives me something. You know what I'm saying? In fact, that's never gonna cut it. Okay? The only way that happens is if you actually spend time together growing a relationship. In other words, you need to spend time in the Word of God. You need to spend time in prayer. You need to spend time with Jesus. Okay? If you don't do that, you set yourself up to be a Martha. Where in times of crisis, you'll have this confrontation where sometimes you'll choose to walk away. And I think he always draws you back. At least that's been my, right? But it's easy to have that temper tantrum and say, just, you know what, you're not. But if you come to that place where you can actually trust Jesus, then you don't have that what I call a faith crisis. And there's only one way that it happens. I think we're going to leave that last slide off. Because we're just about out of time. And I told you I'm like a watch guy, so it makes me crazy. Okay? And so I'm just going to finish with this. What determines whether the hard times drive you away from Jesus or towards Jesus? The amount of time you spend with Him on a day-to-day basis. Okay? You want to crisis-proof your relationship with Jesus? Then you need to spend time with Him. So let's do communion together then.